Chapter 15. Interesting Fact. Elodine strode into the lecture hall, almost an hour late. His clothes were covered in grass stains, and there were dried leaves tangled in his hair. He was grinning. Today there were only six of us waiting for him. Jared hadn't shown up for the last two classes. Given the scathing comments he'd made before disappearing, I doubted he'd be coming back.
"Now,"
Elodine shouted without preamble,
"tell me things."
This was his newest way to waste our time. At the beginning of every lecture, he demanded an interesting fact he had never heard before. Of course, Elodine himself was the sole arbiter of what was interesting, and if the first fact you provided didn't measure up, or if he already knew it, he would demand another, and another, until you finally came up with something that amused him. He pointed at Brian.
"Go."
"Spiders can breathe underwater,"
she said promptly. Elodine nodded.
"Good."
He looked at Fenton.
"There's a river south of Vintus that flows the wrong way," Fenton said. "It's a saltwater river that runs inland from the Kentthay Sea."
Elodine shook his head.
"Already know about that."
Fenton looked down at a piece of paper.
"Emperor Venturan once passed a law." "Boring,"
Elodine interjected, cutting him off.
"If you drink more than 2 quarts of seawater, you'll throw up?"
Fenton asked. Elodine worked his mouth speculatively, as if he were trying to get a piece of gristle out of his teeth. Then he gave a satisfied nod.
"That's a good one."
He pointed to Uresh.
"You can divide infinity an infinite number of times, and the resulting pieces will still be infinitely large,"
Uresh said in his odd Lanati accent.
"But if you divide a non-infinite number an infinite number of times, the resulting pieces are non-infinitely small. Since they are non-infinitely small, but there are infinite number of them, if you add them back together, their sum is infinite. This implies any number is, in fact, infinite."
"Wow,"
Elodine said after a long pause. He leveled a serious finger at the Lenati man.
"Uresh, your next assignment is to have sex. If you do not know how to do this, see me after class."
He turned to look at Inisa.
"The Ilish people never developed a written language," she said.
"Not true," Elodine said. "They used a system of woven knots."
He made a complex motion with his hands as if braiding something.
"And they were doing it long before we started scratching pictograms on the skins of sheep."
"I didn't say they lacked recorded language," Inisa muttered. "I said written language."
Elodine managed to convey his vast boredom in a simple shrug. Inisa frowned at him.
"Fine. There's a type of dog in Skaria that gives birth through a vestigial penis," she said.
"Wow," Elodine said. "Okay, yeah."
He pointed to Fela.
80 years back, the medica discovered how to remove cataracts from eyes,"
Fela said.
"I already know that,"
Elodine said, waving his hand dismissively.
"Let me finish,"
Fela said.
"When they figured out how to do this, it meant they could restore sight to people who had never been able to see before. These people hadn't gone blind. They had been born blind."
Elodine cocked his head curiously. Fela continued.
"After they could see, they were shown objects. A ball, a cube, and a pyramid all sitting on a table."
Fela made the shapes with her hands as she spoke.
"Then the physickers asked them which one of the three objects was round."
Fela paused for effect, looking at all of us.
"They couldn't tell, just by looking at them. They needed to touch them first. Only after they touched the ball did they realize it was the round one."
Elodine threw his head back and laughed delightedly.
"Really?"
he asked her. She nodded.
"Fela winched the prize,"
Elodine shouted, throwing up his hands. He reached into his pocket and brought out something brown and oblong, pressing it into her hands. She looked at it curiously. It was a milkweed pod.
"Kvothe hasn't gone yet,"
Brian said.
"Doesn't matter,"
Elodine said in an offhand way.
"Kvothe is crap at interesting fact."
I scowled as loudly as I could.
"Fine,"
Elodine said.
"Tell me what you have." "The Ardam mercenaries have a secret art called the Lethani," I said. "It is the key to what makes them such fierce warriors."
Elodin cocked his head to one side.
Really?
He asked.
What is it?
I don't know, I said flippantly, hoping to irritate him. Like I said, it's a secret. Elodin seemed to consider this for a moment, then shook his head.
No. Interesting, but not a fact. It's like saying the Kaelish moneylenders have a secret art called financia that makes them such fierce bankers. There's no substance to it.
He looked at me again, expectantly. I tried to think of something else, but I couldn't. My head was full of fairy tales and dead-ended research into the Chandrian.
See? Elodin said to Brian. He's crap. I just don't know why we're wasting our time with this, I snapped. Do you have better things to do?
Elodin asked.
Yes,
I exploded angrily.
I have 1,000 more important things to do, like learning about the name of the wind.
Elodin held up a finger, attempting to strike a sage pose and failing because of the leaves in his hair.
Small facts lead to great knowing, he intoned, just as small names lead to large names.
He clapped his hands and rubbed them together eagerly.
Right, Fela, open your prize and we can give Quoth the lesson he so greatly desires.
Fela cracked the dry husk of the milkweed pod. The white fluff of the floating seed spilled out into her hands. Master Namer motioned for her to toss it into the air. Fela threw it, and everyone watched the mass of white fluff sail toward the high ceiling of the lecture hall, then fall back heavily to the ground.
God damn it,
Elodin said. He stalked over to the bundle of seeds, picked it up, and waved it around vigorously until the air was full of gently floating puffs of milkweed seed. Then Elodin started to chase the seeds wildly around the room, trying to snatch them out of the air with his hands. He clambered over the chairs, ran across the lecturer's dais, and jumped onto the table at the front of the room. All the while, he grabbed the seeds. At first, he did it one-handed like you catch a ball. But he met with no success, and so he started clapping at them, the way you'd swat a fly. When this didn't work either, he tried to catch them with both hands, the way a child might cup a firefly out of the air. But he couldn't get hold of one. The more he chased, the more frantic he became, the faster he ran, the wilder he grabbed. This went on for a full minute. 2 minutes. 5 minutes. 10. It might have gone on for the entire class period, but eventually he tripped over a chair and tumbled painfully to the stone floor, tearing open the leg of his pants and bloodying his knee. Clutching his leg, he sat on the ground and let loose with a string of angry cursing, the like of which I had never heard in my entire life. He shouted and snarled and spat. He moved through at least 8 languages, and even when I couldn't understand the words he used, the sound of it made my gut clench and the hair on my arm stand up. He said things that made me sweat. He said things that made me sick. He said things I didn't know it was possible to say. I expect this might have continued, but while drawing an angry breath, he sucked one of the floating milkweed seeds into his mouth and began to cough and choke violently. Eventually, he spat out the seed, caught his breath, got to his feet, and limped out of the lecture hall without saying another word. This was not a particularly odd day's class under Master Elodin. After Elodin's class, I ate a bit of lunch at Anchor's, then went to my shift in the Medica, watching more experienced Elthe diagnose and treat incoming patients. After that, I headed over the river with the hope of finding Denna. It was my 3rd trip in as many days, but it was a crisp, sunny day, and after all my time in the archives, I felt the need to stretch my legs a bit. I stopped at the Aeolian first, though it was far too early for Denna to be there. I chatted with Stanchion and Diok before moving on to a few of the other inns I knew she occasionally frequented. Taps, Barrel and Bale, and Dog in the Wall. She wasn't at any of those either. I wandered through a few public gardens, their trees almost entirely devoid of leaves. Then I visited all the instrument shops I could find, browsing the lutes and asking if they'd seen a pretty dark-haired woman looking at harps. They hadn't. It was fully dark by then, so I stopped by the Aeolian again and wandered slowly through the crowd. Denner was still nowhere to be seen, but I did meet up with Count Threep. We shared a drink and listened to a few songs before I left. I pulled my cloak more tightly around my shoulders as I started back to the university. Imre's streets were busier now than they had been during the day, and despite the chill in the air, there was a festival feel to the town. Music of a dozen different kinds poured from the doorways of inns and theatres. People crowded in and out of restaurants and exhibition halls. Then I heard a laugh rise high and bright over the low murmuring of the crowds. I would have recognized it anywhere. It was Denner's laugh. I knew it like the backs of my own hands. I turned around, feeling a smile spread across my face. This was always the way of it. I only seemed to be able to find her after I'd given up hope. I scanned the faces in the milling throng and found her easily. Denner stood by the doorway of a small cafe, wearing a long dress of dark blue velvet. I took a step toward her, then stopped. I watched as Denner spoke to someone standing behind the open door of a carriage. The only part of her companion I could see was the very top of his head. He was wearing a hat with a tall white plume. A moment later, Ambrose closed the carriage door. He gave her a wide, charming smile and said something that made her laugh. Lamplight glittered on the gold brocade of his jacket, and his gloves were dyed the same dark royal purple as his boots. The color should have looked garish on him, but it didn't. As I stood staring, a passing two-horse fetter cart nearly knocked me flat and trampled me, which would have been fair as I was standing in the middle of the road. The driver cursed and flicked out with his horsewhip as he went past. It caught me on the back of the neck, but I didn't even feel it. I regained my balance and looked up in time to see Ambrose kiss Denner's hand. Then, moving gracefully, he offered her his arm, and they entered the cafe together.